Well, hello, cultists, and welcome to another episode of Cult Classics. I'm your host, DK, but of course you already know that. And today, do we have a cinema classic for you? Return of the Killer Tomatoes. Sounds like a real winner, doesn't it? Now, some lucky listener today, if they know the secret word, will have a chance to win our Pot of Gold jackpot, which today is up to a prune-flavoured lollipop with fluff attached and dinner with Mike Wilson. Wow. And all you have to do is know our secret word when I call. It's a common household word, one used all the time. And our secret word today is the. Okay, now on with the show. Okay, let's all get comfy now. Are you comfy? Good. Roll it, Nick. Yes, today we're discussing a parody movie sequel of a parody movie. A film so well loved that it has a whopping 0% critic score on, you guessed it, Rotten Tomatoes. It is the 90 minutes of utter absurdity that is Return of the Killer Tomatoes. And as always, I'm not alone. Yep, I may have volunteered to watch this, but by God, I'm going to take some people down with me. First up, you last heard her, well, just last month on our Twilight Zone review. It's the silver screen guest with the best, it's Adrienne.
Hello, everyone. Happy to be back.
How are you today? You ready to go?
Oh, yeah, I'm ready to go. I'm great. It's chilly in Southern California, but by the time this airs, maybe it'll start to warm up.
Nice. Now, this is kind of the perfect movie for you, isn't it? Not that I assume it's in any way a favorite, but because of what you do for a living, isn't that right?
Yes, that's true. My mom and I have a seasonal heirloom tomato plant business in Southern California. We ship plants around the country whenever it's time for people to plant. So I suppose that this is apropos.
And it hasn't made you afraid to go to work this year?
Not yet. But, you know, we don't grow any that are as big as the ones in the first movie.
That would take some doing.
And we don't even have any fuzzy ones. We really need to get on it.
Oh, definitely. So, yeah, we've also got another of our awesome regulars rounding out the guest list. He's been present for a few episodes of the show now, most recently on last season's Rocky Horror Picture Show episode. He's a writer, director, producer. Honestly, I'm not sure how he finds the time, but somehow he has to save this show's bacon once again. It's Whaley.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me back.
How are things in your neck of the woods, man?
They're going all right. Weather's not awful. It's not as it was. We got snow for the first time in years and years that lasted almost some. It was, the ice was still on the ground a week after it had done last week. So, like, it was, of course, shut everything down here because we're not prepared for that in the South. But other than that, everything's going pretty good.
Nice one. How's the directing going? Anything new on the horizon?
A buddy of mine who's going blind came to me about a feature that he wanted to direct, and I said, yeah, I'll produce and shoot it, but little way through, he was like, hey, I'm probably going to have you co-directing as well, because at the last minute, put him in it as the killer, because he's 6'4" and large, and the killer was just wearing a ski mask and no talking. And we were like, oh, we can save money and put you as the killer. But because of that, he had me helping him direct some, so I might end up being co-director on it. It's a cross between Friday the 13th and the Pet Cemetery.
Ooh, nice. Oh,
yeah, it's going to be pretty fun. It's called Don't Bury the Dead. Yeah, we got a little bit more to shoot, and then it'll go into post, and it'll probably be there for a while.
Yeah, so speaking of saving money on film productions, we'll take a look at today's movie, which is, of course, Return of the Killer Tomatoes. It's a 1988 comedy parody film directed by John DeBello, a sequel to the 1978 film Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. The film stars Anthony Stark, Karen Mistel, George Clooney, and John Astin. It's set 10 years after the events of Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, hence referred to as the Great Tomato War. Tomatoes have been outlawed, though Professor Mortimer Gang... I can't believe I'm reading this. Though Professor Mortimer Gangreen seeks to unleash another wave of tomato terror. Now, principal photography for the film took place in the South Bay area of San Diego County with a production budget of just $1 million. The movie released April 22nd, 1988, grossing just $5 million in the US. Now, like its predecessor, Return of the Killer Tomatoes was largely panned by critics. Retrospective reviews over the intervening years have been more favourable. Having said that, the movie currently holds a score of 5.3 out of 10 on IMDb, and as I mentioned earlier, 0% from 6 critics' reviews on movie aggregate site Rotten Tomatoes. Nevertheless, it remains a growing cult favourite and a curio due to it featuring a very young George Clooney. As always, today's movie can be found in both digital and physical formats, dependent on your location. And I will say that the Arrow Video Blu-ray release is very nice. Yeah, I first heard of this one through word of mouth. I saw this before I saw the original. A school friend saw it and told me how hilarious it was, but our local video store never had a copy in stock. Such was the obscure nature of this one. I had heard of the original years before when I was very young, but I didn't know it was a parody. Instead, thinking it was deadly serious, and being at such a young age, it terrified me, gave me nightmares. I was very wary of tomatoes after that. It wasn't until my friend told me about the sequel and how it was a comedy that it finally clicked. It still took me a while to track it down, though, but when I did, I had a great time with it. Truth be told, I hadn't seen it since then until watching for this episode. All I can really remember is Clooney with longish hair and the MST3K-like nature of the production. And yes, I do now own a copy of this on Blu-ray. How about you guys? Do you remember the first time you saw this one and any particular memories?
Like you, I assumed I had seen Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. Like, I assumed I had seen the first one. I knew the song from it. And I don't know if I just maybe had caught a piece here and there and thought it was funny, but when I got the thing to do Return of the Killer Tomatoes, which I knew I hadn't seen, I was like, you know what? I'm going to go back and watch the first one because they're both on free streaming stuff here. And I went back and watched Attack, and I had never seen it. So my first time watching Return was yesterday to prepare for this episode. I know the theme song. Like, I know all lots of stuff from it, but I have no memory of watching the original. Yesterday was my first time, so...
Oh, I've got to say that once I hear that theme song, that shit is stuck in my head all day.
It's stuck in my head right now.
Yeah, same here. I was humming it just as I was setting up. So, yeah, Adrian, am I right in thinking that you'd not even heard of this one until it came up in the schedule?
You know, I'm a movie person. I like movies. So I had already always seen the name, but I had never seen any of the Attack of the Tomato group. I had to watch the first one because I don't like watching Return of something if I haven't watched the first one. So this was a twofer for me. I watched the first one and then I watched this one. So I had just a couple days ago. So I had never seen them. But, you know, you always see. I was a big blockbuster goer back in the day. So I like the cult movie section and these were always there.
So this was something of a novelty, for, I guess, for both of you.
Absolutely.
For sure.
And my household.
Oh, did they watch it with you?
No, they ran away, but like they would hear it and they would come in and just shake their head at me, you know, like, what are you doing? I'm like, it's for the podcast. Oh, okay.
You're sat there saying, I have the weirdest friends.
I do.
I mean, normally we ask, have your impressions changed since you first watched it? But seeing as, you know, you guys first watched it this time, then we'll get straight into it with the writing. It was written by John DiBello, who directed, Costa Dillon and Stephen Pease. The inspiration, apparently, by the early 60s, the Toho Studios had become a monster movie factory, obviously, with Godzilla, which started in 54. They released an onslaught of creature features, the strangest of which was 1963's Matango. Apparently, it's a twisted survival tale about five people who get shipwrecked on an island that's dotted with radioactive mushrooms. They eat one, and our heroes learn that they get transformed into a violent mushroom humanoid fungus. Matango never saw a theatrical release in the US, but a dubbed version of the film was apparently broadcast on American TV every so often under a different name. Attack of the Mushroom People, that kind of thing. So one night, a San Diego high school student named Costa Dillon caught the flick on TV, and that ridiculous title struck a chord. He says, "I saw Attack of the Mushroom People and thought, how dumb is this?" Dillon said, and suddenly he found himself thinking of ways to make the concept even sillier, and ended up writing Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. "I don't know why tomatoes came to mind first, maybe because they're so innocuous," he said. I think he succeeded with making it sillier. It's certainly an absurd thing, so I'm just wondering what you guys think to the writing on this one.
Now, we're talking about the first or the second?
Well, we're going straight into the second. So
okay. I liked the second one better. When I watched the first one, I didn't laugh at all, which was kind of sad. I did laugh at this, so there was some clever stuff. I like the use of all the physical comedy. That helped me, and that we had some actors that were pretty good doing that. So I was glad that they had that in the direction.
Yeah.
I have a soft spot in my heart for, I love breaking the fourth wall kind of things. They're running out of money gags and stuff like that. I thought the writing in that was very fun. I did laugh a lot more in this one than the first one. There was a couple gags in the first one that did that, but the writing in the first one was 70s and a little more problematic. But this one, I found it very fun, somewhat clever sometimes, and of course very stupid at times, but that's what it's supposed to be. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
There are some very funny gags in this. And I do love the way that, as you say, they do break the fourth wall, not just with the direction scene, but I love it when Igor, Steve Lundquist, and he's first driving the garbage truck and he just looks at the camera and gives you that really cheesy grin.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some really good jokes in this. The problem is, I think once you see the joke, it's kind of funny. But then occasionally they have a tendency to kind of really hammer it into the ground. I'm specifically thinking of the America's Cup. When the first watching it in the pizza restaurant, I thought that shit was hilarious. But by the third time, you're thinking, okay, you could really go someplace else with this now.
Yeah, I remember laughing at least on the second one. I mean, jokes are supposed to come in threes like that when you do callbacks. Yeah, I think maybe they stayed on it a little too long on the third one. Like, throwing it in the background of the scene for people would have been funnier, I think. But
yeah. I do like how they they've written it to just completely just take the piss. There's no hint of being serious with regards to the script at all. And I also love the fact that they did the branding joke, what, like a decade before Wayne's World tried doing it?
Yeah, the branding joke was... and then they tried to slip some in later that were funny that didn't seem like they were trying to brand it too, but then... And I was like, oh, they're branding a ton of stuff. And then when they cut to the thing, like, hey, how are we on budget? And they're all like champagne and and all that. That killed me. Like, I loved that. I was just like, oh, that's genius. That was a very smart, funny use of that. They're like, we don't do that. We'll just, and like George Clooney, well, we'll just brand it, you know?
Yeah. I like
it's obvious. Like,
yeah, that's funny.
But I did like it where, you know, the guy goes up to the counter, they're doing the branding thing, and then you think it's over. So he sits down with the other guy, the main character, and then somebody immediately just comes on screen at the bottom and puts a big box of Kellogg's cornflakes in between them.
Funny.
Some of this is kind of comedy gold, but a lot of it is, I don't know how to describe it. We had a kids' TV show in the UK called Rent-A-Ghost. It was kind of supposed to be like a comedy soap opera about, you can just rent ghosts to haunt your place. The production budget on that was on this level, but think of a BBC budget. You know, when you think of classic Doctor Who, it was below that kind of thing. The jokes, even as a 12-year-old, I was groaning. And this very much gave me that kind of vibe. So a lot of it is kind of puerile. It's almost like it's for school kids. And apart from the sex jokes, you would think that it is. So I just wondered what you guys think to that. I mean, I don't think you'd ever consider it highbrow in any way, shape, or form. But
I don't think it's highbrow. I think there was some very smart jokes in there and well written jokes. But it is definitely for the movie. It is. I mean, it's not supposed to be highbrow. So like, I I liked the level of jokes, and I thought they were very, very good. Some were very smart, some were very stupid, but it's supposed to be. You got to balance it with that kind of, with this kind of movie, a parody of a parody, you know, sequel. Like, I think they've got, you've got to cover the gambit when it comes to something like this type of movie, and I think they did it well.
I like how they also made it a buddy movie. I just love the fact that George Clooney's character in the end was convinced by his bedmate, as it were, to go and help his friend rescue the love of his life. And he didn't want to go, but I love that part. You know, when they ran off together and put on the motorcycle helmets and zoomed off to danger. And I kind of thought that that was cool. I also liked how they humanized Igor. I thought he was a cool character, famous swimmer, the actor.
And yes, Steve Lundquist.
Yeah, Steve Lundquist. I like how they humanized him a little bit with the teddy bear. But then the teddy bear during the scene where...
help, NSPCA!
Yes, that was funny. But I loved how, as he was being silenced, at what we'll say, he did those quotes from some of our favorite sci-fi. He did a line that Hal said to Dave. He did the line, "Danger, Will Robinson." And then he did, "He's dead, Jim." So he was silenced on a sci-fi note, as it were.
Yeah, I do like some of the visual gags as well, like the Oliver North wing at the prison.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's funny. Oh gosh.
my one of my favorite ones with that is when they're near the end and George Clooney's like, "So we're looking for something like a, or whatever, like a laboratory," and then it cuts and just like that, and then he cuts back to George Clooney. He's like, "I can read."
Yeah.
Right. That visual gag was, it was honestly Clooney's delivery of that. It was just perfect for the read on that line.
Yeah. Another one where they're putting the quarters and playing the different music on the jukebox, and it ends up on the blonde woman, and George Clooney just looked so fed up, and he went, "We'll stick with this one."
Well, it was also because he was a ladies' man is what they were going for, too. There.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, doesn't he go back and end? He was like, "Oh, he's going to go help clean up," whatever. And the end of it, like, he gets with that blonde woman. And that's what they're running on the beach. And then it cuts back to the women, topless women or whatever, singing on the beach thing that they started the movie with. Full bookend joke there, which I liked.
I do like how they turn it around. They remark on it themselves. You know, everything from the first reel pays off in this, except, and then the pizza dough lands on his head.
Right, because he had flipped it up at the very beginning.
Yeah.
And we never saw it again.
Yeah. The entire thing being saved by the guy who's introducing the movie, making the phone call, and Gangrene picking up the phone.
Yeah. The meta into there was just very good. Yeah, I liked that. I thought that they could have played that again. I did like the one that they did it. You know what? They did it twice because they did it where the phone, they took a phone call at the studio and the person was complaining about something. He's like, "Oh yeah, wrong number." And hanged up on him.
Yeah.
And that joke, I was like, "Oh, that joke's really good." Because that's not supposed to be part of the movie, but it's part of the movie. And that's their use of that worked well.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are some really good moments. It's not as rapid fire, I think, as your other parody movies. And when you look at things like Blazing Saddles or something like that, but when it works, I think it really kind of works in this. Whatever criticism you can throw at it, you can't say that their heart's not in it. It's energetic, you know, they seem to be having a good time while doing it. And I think that's what you've got to go for with these things.
Yeah, yeah. They clearly show a love of movie making, and they were able to get some recognizable names at the time. You know, John Astin was playing a crazy, crazy psycho person, but he was there. You know, that was pretty cool. I did not know he was in it. I also did not know that George Clooney was in this. This was all a surprise to me. So that was cool.
Yeah, it's obvious that they had a very, very limited budget. It surprised me just how much of this film is basically Anthony Stark just running around the streets of San Diego screaming.
He does a lot of physical work in this movie. Absolutely. Yeah. Very, very frantic running around saving the day.
He seems to put, I mean, the only thing I really know him from, I think, other than this, was playing some kind of accountant, the Bond movie, License to Kill. That's about as memorable he is. But in this, I absolutely love him. He seems to be putting so much energy, so much effort into this role that everybody else is just kind of,
He's still working too.
He is, yeah. I mean,
he hasn't been doing a ton, but he's been doing guest stars on some TV shows, it looks like. He was in 22 episodes of the Magnificent Seven TV series.
Yeah, I saw that.
He looks like he went into TV a lot. There's a few movie small parts here and there, but like he was an episode of Seinfeld, Cheers, Beverly Hills 90210, the 1990 Flash TV show.
It's very strange, and yet the second fiddle in this. He's one of the most sought actor directors in Hollywood. It's really kind of weird how that worked out. And you know, the last thing you would have expected is for him to be in this.
Yeah.
And yet the one that he apologizes for is Batman and Robin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't disagree with that apology.
No. He didn't famously say that, you know, if you ever approached him and said you'd gone to see Batman and Robin, he would refund the money of your ticket himself.
He had been in a lot of stuff at the time when they did this.
I think the only thing I remember him for at that point was Roseanne.
Yeah, he had still been in, he was on an episode of Golden Girls. He was on 17 episodes of The Facts of Life in 85.
Mm-hmm. I remember that. Yeah.
And then Mistral, who went on to, I believe, be in Space Cowboys with Eastwood and Tommy Lee Jones and James Garner, Donald Sutherland.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, some of them have a fairly decent career, and that's an understatement since this. I will say that in the 2023 documentary, Screaming Soup, The Attack of the Killer Tomatoes Retrospective, John Astin states his performance as Gangrene was inspired by his father, who is a real-life scientist in charge of developing a death ray for the U.S. government.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. He went on to say, as he prepared for the role, Astin asked DeBello if he should see the first Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, and DeBello said, "Don't bother. There's a lot of publicity about it being the world's worst movie." Well, it really is. Personally, I do think that title's been stolen in the years since, but...
I've seen worse movies than Attack of the Killer Tomatoes.
Oh, God, definitely. Yeah. So, yeah, when it comes to the acting, I mean, do you guys have what you would call an MVP? I mean, I know it's a tough choice in this ensemble cast of such high quality.
I'm giving it to the buddies together on screen having fun, Chad and Matt. But it was really fun to watch George Clooney for me. I thought he was funny and cute and everything, but also loyal. So I liked that about him. I liked that character.
I'm going to say Professor Gangrene gets it for me. I love John Astin, and he didn't have to commit as hard as he did, but he's a fucking professional and did. And I love that. Yeah. It's ridiculous, but...
A lesser actor would have kind of just thought, oh, I'll get in this for the paycheck, not putting much effort, but he really just goes for it.
A professional will do that, and then like somebody else that would be like an up-and-coming, like they hadn't had their break and they thought maybe this was their break, would also give that performance. But somebody else, yeah, if they would have gotten another famous person for that part, because it was small enough that you can afford a famous person for it, which, you know, you have to do when budgeting, somebody else could have not committed as well, but John Astin, 100%. Like, I like Anthony Stark and George Clooney. They're fun in there, but I think I'm going to give it to John Astin.
I think it's going to be John Astin myself.
Awesome.
As I say, he's just, I love him in pretty much everything he's been in, but I think the guy's a legend.
Oh, yeah.
It brings us to the production design. I think this is kind of like the best way of stretching a dollar. If you're going to go to a matte painting, let's just go to an actual painting with smoke billowing out of the chimney.
Yeah, that was funny. I laughed so hard at that. I was like, oh man, this movie might be pretty good.
Yeah, there's some good use, and you can't really say it's masterful puppeteer work on FT, but you still come away loving the guy.
Oh, I love him. He's so cute and fuzzy, and he was such a little hero. And you know, what a good guy.
He was my, that's why he's my avatar right now.
Absolutely.
I was going to say he was my favorite actor in it, but it was puppeteer. And I don't want to give that. It's fun, but he was one of my favorite characters.
Mm-hmm. And I got so many little R2-D2 vibes from him too, with his little sounds. You could always tell if he was happy, sad, scared. That was cute, especially when Igor first puts him in the trash can. I had to rewind because there was noise in the background, and he was sad. So he's clearly sentient. You know, yes. He didn't want to go in the trash can. That's when I kind of, my little heartstrings got pulled. And I was like, oh, no, we got to save this little guy. I'm all into it, you know, like all upset, staring at the TV going, what's happening?
I did love where they're all trapped in the basement and he's trying to effect this rescue. They just sound all fed up because he's like, it's FT.
Right. But he did it.
One of my favorite jokes that involves FT was the tomato drug dealer was selling it to the market.
Yes.
It, the thing, when Matt ran through and grabbed it, did you guys notice that he threw money when he did that?
I didn't see him throwing money.
Yeah, if you go back and look at it, I caught it and I was like, that's really fucking smart. He didn't want to steal it, even though it didn't belong to them.
Right.
So right. there's like three bills of cash that go flying in the air as he runs out. It's really like, it's a real quick, but I was like, oh, that's really fucking funny. Adding to that scene with, because he should just steal it. It doesn't belong to that guy. But
right, but he is a good guy.
But he's a good guy, and he doesn't want to. Yeah. Also, doesn't want a drug dealer coming after him.
Nope. So, and it's also crazy. The whole situation is crazy because it was very much a Godfather thing. Yeah. You know, like I just thought that was great. Ran through and rescued him. He's reluctantly got involved, but now he's all in, and he's gonna give his all.
Yeah, and yeah. Especially as much as he didn't like FT at first because he's a tomato, yeah. You know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. He's like, what? No, but then he
grew as a character.
Yeah, I love him.
It also did lead to that joke with Finn Letter, where he's reading out the letter, and it's like he's having a two-way conversation with his nephew. And it's been used so many times, but I think it worked really well in this one.
Yeah, that did work well, yeah.
But he still didn't trust him, so he still had to keep him tied up.
Yeah.
I mean, I was on the edge of my seat, you know, like, is he going to see the note? You know, like, oh my God, this movie's so good.
But again, it's going back to that meta thing where he says, we don't have any paper. And George Clooney says, here, take a page out of my script.
Do you have a pen? Of course.
The only thing I've got really for the production design is, which I think is another very clever visual joke, on the wall behind Gangrene, he has like a series of clocks. I don't know if you guys noticed it.
Oh, one of his rooms.
Yeah, I think that was Australia.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. One of them is Las Vegas, and it has no hands, which is a reference to the fact that in Vegas casinos, they don't have clocks.
Yep.
I mean, when I'm watching it, I'm just thinking, oh, I don't know if I can take much more of this because it is so absurd. But talking about it with you guys, it's making me think, what the fuck is wrong with the critics on Rotten Tomatoes? Because it is really good fun.
Here's the thing, it like on IMDb, which has people rating it and stuff, it's the highest rated of all the Killer Tomato movies.
Yeah.
Now, granted, if we were watching, you know, Killer Tomatoes Eat France or whichever one it is, the last one they did, yeah, we'd probably be like, okay, that makes sense. But like, this is the highest rated out of all of them, so I think it's actually more of a cult favorite of all of them.
No matter how many times I see people kind of giving it a bad time,
I think people say it's crap because it's not the original. Like, there's those people that are like, it's not as good, even though, like, Godfather 2 exists. And there are exceptions to that sequel rule.
It's never going to be one of my all-time favorite movies. But it's just fun. And, you know, sometimes you can put something on the background just for a laugh.
For sure.
Yeah.
We'll get to the sound design now, which is Neil Fox and Rick Patterson. And they, you know, as well as doing the incidental music, came up with a lot of the songs, like the theme song and the Big Breasted Girl song. And so I just wonder what you guys thought to the sound design and the music in this.
I kept wanting to know if there was an actual designation for a movie that has constant loud music in the background, almost like a Miami Vice chase scene. Like the whole time, it seemed like the music was omnipresent. Like there wasn't a lot of downtime. And so I was wondering, is that a style?
I don't know.
I think it's a choice, but I don't know. Yeah. Okay. The music made it fun. It kept it going. But I feel like, you know how earlier you were saying that Anthony Stark's character was running all around, but imagine him running without that crazy Miami Vice style music.
Oh, that just wouldn't work.
Yeah, that wouldn't. So you had to have that synthesizer kind of
And also the 80s.
Synthesizers
at the time.
Oh, I know. Yeah. And fluffy hair and fear of women of color on film with speaking lines.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's still that fear, unfortunately, out there now.
I know. It was so noticeable in this for me because, of course, it's Southern California. And I'm like, I'm from here. You just were turning people away at the casting calls, apparently. But yeah, I liked the sound. I liked the songs. You know, it appealed to a certain genre at the beginning, you know, the young boy men or whatever. And it was okay. Kind of like Fast Times at Ridgemont High is kind of what that reminded me of somehow. But I appreciated all the energetic music.
I'm a big synthwave fan because I'm just very nostalgic for the 80s. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the music in this, I just thought, this is really good.
I thought it was exactly what it needed to be for the time it was in the 80s and for the type of movie it is and stuff like that. I thought it worked for what it was. Do I think that's great? I mean, yes, no. Like, I mean, I'm on the fence, I guess. Like, I thought it worked for the movie. Would I want to do that if I was making something like this? I'd probably make different choices, but it's also a different time now, too. But no, I thought it worked. I thought it was good. Mm-hmm.
It's more for the original, but they do play it in this one. To record the vocals for the puberty love song that they refer to at the start as Defeating the Tomatoes, DiBello recruited his then 14-year-old neighbor, Matt Cameron, because his voice was audibly changing at the time. And Cameron seemed like an ideal choice. Weirdly enough, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes didn't kill his music career, as he wound up as the drummer for both Pearl Jam and Soundgarden.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Well, apparently him and I think it was his sister. They also got cameos in that first one. You know, if you're a Soundgarden or Pearl Jam fan, keep an eye out in the movie and you might spot them. There's one bit later where they're trying to bring what they think is Tara back from that tomato. And it goes to a pretty good facsimile of Don Johnson in Miami Vice. And the music's pretty much spot on for the old Jan Hammer stuff. And going back to what you were saying earlier about the tomato dealer with the Godfather stuff, you can hear the riff on the Godfather theme as they're doing it. I do think it's obviously a close-knit production crew that's putting this together. And I just think they work really well together and they've all got a similar kind of sense of humor. And I think that's why this works when a lot of these kind of things don't necessarily do that.
Oh, that's an interesting point, because I was thinking to myself when I was watching some of these scenes where they cut to the production team and the director and everything, I thought, that must have been fun. That must have been fun to write and fun to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Regardless of what you might think of the final product, the fun that they obviously have behind the scenes, to me, translates on screen.
When you're on a set and you're having fun and everybody's doing their job and performing, but also just everybody's enjoying themselves and stuff like that, it always comes through. Some of the best TV shows of all time, it shows on there too. Like the people are still friends now. I'm like, why? What was the secret ingredient to making these shows work? And it was just like, it's the chemistry. And then like, you become real friends with the people on there if you weren't already prior. Those productions work better than famous person A, famous person B, famous person C, who don't really have great chemistry together. Yeah, the movie's got famous people and it's probably okay, but like the ones that last and are better tend to have that great chemistry.
Yeah, they do stand the test of time. We're bringing up the legacy of this thing now. So obviously we've mentioned them. A further two movies followed this one, 1991's Killer Tomatoes Strike Back and 1992's Killer Tomatoes Eat France. Both were released direct to video. Although at the end credits for this, they're apparently going straight to Eat France. There was also the cartoon spin-off released in 1990, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, which it ran on Fox Kids, but despite the name, it was based on this movie and not the original. Mm-hmm. And a 1991 video game released for the Nintendo Entertainment System was based on this series. Have you guys seen that? Did you see that cartoon?
I never saw it.
I didn't see it, but I remember when it came out thinking, wow, they really are moving this franchise to a new generation.
Yeah.
Some people love it so much. So then they keep bringing it up and they want to do projects about it.
For all the things that say, you know, this movie's a failure and it was a flop and it was panned by critics, it kept enough interest to actually, you know, get a little cartoon series out of it.
I see John Astin actually did the voice of it.
He did.
Yeah, I was 10 when it came out, or 9. So I did not know about it. It didn't come on where I was watching cartoons at the time.
I mean, I was a kid, obviously, when it was on, when they showed it in the UK anyway, and I saw it, and I'd heard about Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, but as I say, it wasn't until later that I came to the film, so I didn't put two and two together. But in preparation for this, I went back, and if you watch the intro for the cartoon, it is a beat-by-beat intro of everything that happens in this movie.
Oh.
It's got FT, Tara, you know, but instead of riding a moped delivering pizzas, he's on a skateboard, just to make it more kid-friendly.
Yeah,
but other than that, even Igor's there in his suit and tie and stuff. Yeah, apparently Kim Harrison's book series The Hollows is based on a world where genetically engineered tomatoes kill off a significant portion of the human population, and the author admitted that inspiration came from this movie. Viper Comics released a comic book adaptation of the original movie in October 2008, and a Greek film released in 1991 was made as an homage to this and the original. Please forgive the terrible pronunciation here. I epithesi to gigantio moussaka, which literally translates as the attack of the giant moussaka.
I love moussaka, just so you know.
Well, we're determined to make you hate everything that you once loved here, Adrian. So now in 2008, a remake of the original was announced, though by 2011, those associated with the project were no longer involved. And since then, there's been no more information on the project. All the sequels aside, cartoon series, it's not really been heard of since. Is it a shame? Because I think this is one of those things that you can't necessarily continue to make a franchise out of. I think it's got a limited lifespan.
I think it's done what it can do. And it looks like, you know, from there, they're not making any more. Right? All the original group did the ones they did. And I think with the last two that they made, you know, trying to get it out and claim on the fame of it, that I think it should be done. Like, it was fun. It's a fun thing, but I don't know that there's more there to do. I think it's run its course personally.
Yeah. I was surprised to learn when I was doing the research for this that there were two other movies, because I never really heard of them.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, and I've not really got an inclination to go and watch them, because other than John Astin, I don't think they feature any of the cast from this one. I think they've got other people playing the parts, as
Same
far
parts,
as I know.
Yeah.
I mean, before we move on, is there anything you guys think we might have missed? Anything you wanted to bring up, but you've not had the opportunity?
You know what? We haven't talked enough. I thought the actor playing Tara did a very good job, especially her acting with Tim. I thought she was good. I looked her up and didn't see. It doesn't look like she's done a ton of things.
No, like I said, I think the last thing that she was in was Space Cowboys. She goes by Karen Waldron now, I believe.
Yeah.
Karen Waldron, yeah.
And she's got some very funny quotable lines in this. I can cook 81 different meals, no 631 sex positions. And like, that is like, how about a blowjob? Maybe I can iron your pants. Like, that's ridiculous and funny.
I do like that. Do you want some breakfast? Toast, eggs, bacon, toast, waffles, and toast?
Yeah.
I'm definitely
funny.
It's for the plants. It's definitely not.
Right. And I really liked the funny screaming scene with her. I wonder how many takes they had to do when she's eating that little insert of plant food that you would have put in your potted plants.
Yeah.
And everybody starts to scream. That's a funny thing to me when that happens in movies.
I love that.
They scare each other and they're all actually legitimately scared. And then FT is scared. Yeah. That made me laugh.
I love how they just lean into the B-moviness of that whole scene. I just think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And there's a scene earlier I love where he doesn't know that she's a tomato. They're just walking down the street and he takes her to look at jewelry. And then she runs to the next window and it's just like a bunch of toasters.
Yeah, that's funny. And the part where he is holding himself back, she's trying to pull him into the adult novelty store. That was funny because he's such a prude and he's like screaming, don't make me go in there. Yeah, that was funny. But I did like that he punched the mime because that mime was getting creepy. Yeah, I did like that. Yeah,
the mime was creepy from the start.
It's weird because, like I said, when I was watching it earlier, I was just thinking, oh, this isn't holding up. But the more we've talked about it, the more I want to go back and watch it again.
Mm-hmm, me too. It's one of those movies that you can put on, like maybe you have some sort of outdoor party or you have some sort of event, but you could have it in the house. And all of a sudden, you're going to find three nerds in there. They're going to wonder where they went and they're all going to be watching this movie going, this is so cool.
Yeah. It gives me the same vibe as it does when I watch Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah.
I just get so much enjoyment out of doing that because it's fun. It's not at anybody's expense, really. It's just there. It's stupid. You can turn your brain off. And every now and again, you'll look up, see something, and just laugh. I mean, I used to put Mystery Science Theater on to fall asleep to because it's like a comfort blanket. And I think this kind of movie is along those lines.
For sure.
That's what we think. But as always, we asked you out there what you think on our socials. So to hear what you had to say, here's Vianne.
Return of the Killer Tomatoes. Return of the Killer Tomatoes. Yeah, that's what I know about this franchise. 10 points to anyone who remembers the cartoon that had similar lyrics in the theme song, which was my introduction. So, yeah, I've seen bits and pieces of it, and we've had some interesting feedback here. Writer 41 says, woof, so bad, and I loved it. John Adams' Phoenix photography, almost as bad as the first one. And I don't mean that as an insult. Bad movie classic. So, yeah, people are liking it in a ironic or kind of fun way. Sean Jones says, it's amazing, and Wayne's World stole the whole product placement gag from it. 5 out of 5. Movie Sky at Blue Sky Social says, this is one they used to play all the time on TV, so I used to watch it pretty frequently when I was a kid, but strangely don't remember much about it other than it being pretty fun. Might need to rewatch it in the future. So again, people are really kind of enjoying it. AJ Gallagher rating no stars. And ironically, also the number of high-powered actors in it at the time with a very funny laughing face. Al Winter, terrible, but I guess a fun one-time watch with friends. And, you know, there's always place for a movie like that. Jorg Eastman says it was awful, and it doesn't sound like he means it in an ironic or fun way. So I think most people enjoyed it as sort of a, you know, B-movie, popcorn, laugh at how bad it is kind of movie. But there are people who genuinely dislike it. And what else can we say besides that for something that has literal killer tomatoes in it? So with that, back to you, DK.
Well, cheers for that, Vianne, and cheers to those of you out there who are kind enough to let us know what you think. As always, if you missed out and really want to make your opinions heard, then we're always listening. So yeah, give us a shout on our aforementioned socials or in the comments below. Now we get to find out what our guests think, and if you've been with us before, you know it's their final thoughts and score out of 5. So with that in mind, yeah, Whaley, we'll come straight to you. Is this movie as killer as it claims?
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think I would give it a 3 out of 5. Like, it was fun. It was silly. It was stupid, which is all the things in this type of movie should be. So I think it's worth watching at least once if you like this type of movie. If you don't like this type of movie and are looking for something more horror or more, you know, regular comedy, it's not for you, you know, but if you like this genre, you definitely should at least watch it once.
Okay. I am so glad, DK, that you let me come on and invited me to come on to this episode, because it's not something I ever would have watched ever. So I'm glad I did. I'm glad I had fun, and I'm going to recommend it to other people that like campy, nerdy stuff. I'm giving this movie a 3 out of 5 because it made me laugh and I found joy in it. So everybody can just deal with it.
Yeah, I can't say it's a top quality movie. It was never intended to be. It's a B movie with its tongue firmly planted in its cheek, with performances and production values to match. DiBello went in calling it one of the worst movies in existence, and he kind of succeeded. I mean, it's bad, but it's intentional. And being a product of the 80s, it's very much dated. Having said that, he was a pioneer in the industry that has since seen such movies as Birdemic, Sharknado, and, you know, pretty much everything put out by Asylum Pictures. The difference is they weren't intended to be bad. Well, I'm, you know, although I'm squinting really hard at Sharknado, DiBello knows what he was doing. So in that regard, it's still a better movie than those unfortunates. It's schlocky, it's puerile. It's got a child's level of silly while including adult themes. I think you've got to be of that playground mindset to get it. For all its meta-referencing of its identity, though, much of it is not particularly great. And what jokes do land, they have a tendency, as I said earlier, to get hammered into the ground before the day's through. I've got fond memories of it, but I'll be honest, from Mel Brooks to the Zucker Brothers' efforts, there are much better parody movies out there. So while it still holds a special place in my heart, and I've no doubt I'll watch it again, I've got to give it a middle of the road. Well, it's middle of the road for me. I'm also giving it a 3. So, and one whole half star of that is just for the 80s-ness of it. So yeah, it's fairly easy to average this one out between everybody. So yeah, that gives Return of the Killer Tomatoes a final cult classic score of 3 out of 5. Yeah, is that the worst? I think that might actually be the worst we've ever reviewed on cult classics. Yeah, do you think that's fair?
No, I do. I think it's a very fair, fair rating for this movie.
Yeah. I mean, when I go a 2.5 stars, it means I either love it nor hate it. And I'm fully prepared to admit that I err on the side of, you know, actually liking this. It's fun.
It's fun. And like I said, it's exactly what it's advertised to be. No, nothing more, nothing less. And it worked. You know, there's a lot of very funny, ridiculous things in here. So I think 3 out of 5 is there. I mean, if I rated it any higher, it'd be like, oh, I watched this on the regular. I own it sort of thing. And I'm probably not going to own it. It's definitely, you know, if this is the type of movie you like, go out and watch it.
Brilliant. Yeah. So that's it. Our time's up for this month. We hope you've enjoyed it. If so, please don't forget to like, subscribe. I promise we do have all kinds of movies here on the show. So I guarantee there will be something in the upcoming months that takes your fancy. Speaking of, we're also building up quite the collection of cult classic episodes. So please check out the playlist on the Silver Screen podcast and see if there's any of your favorites among them. Once more, all that's left is to thank and bid adieu to today's guest for coming with us this month. First of all, Adrian, thank you. How about you, Whaley? Do you have a good time today?
Oh, of course. I always have fun talking movies with you guys.
Awesome. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. But before you go, is there anything you want to draw attention to while you're here? Anywhere the listeners can find you?
I'm always Michael Whaley on Blue Sky. My website's turnofrasefilms.com, but I don't update it as much as I should. I am on TikTok. I think I'm actually still always Michael Whaley on that as well.
Yeah, Adrienne will be back later in the year talking about Greece. Once more, thank you to you out there for joining us this time around. If you want to get in touch, our links will be popping up in a moment on screen or in the description. And if you like this one, then please like and subscribe. We'll be back next month with some awesome guests as we get our ass to Mars. Book passage and come join us first Tuesday of the month. Until then, take care of yourself, save those milk bottles, grab a tuning fork, and remember, they are gardeners and carpenters. They are not tomato men.
You have been listening to the Cult Classic Show, part of the Silver Screen Podcast. Created, written, and hosted by DK. Editing by Nick. Produced by Mike Wilson. Feedback section produced by Lady Vienne. Opening credits by Ian Sanderson. Music by Timeless Journey. Follow us on social media. Links to all of our social media pages can be found on our link tree. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. This has been a Mad Badger production for the Media Matters Podcast Network. Copyright 2024. Thank you for joining us. We hope to see you next time. And remember, no matter where you go, there you are.